Welcome to Tilth Talk Radio. Today we're going to be talking sandhill cranes. We're also going to look at the history of the mozzarella stick. Cool beans, that's corny. We'll have some current events and we'll wrap things up with a Field Good Friday. With me today are Bill Schomburg.
Hey guys.
Todd Schomburg.
Hey to all the Tilthies out there.
And I'm Matt Brueger, all with Tilth Agronomy. Well, we certainly can't say that we've been too dry.
Does June showers bring July flowers?
Maybe. Maybe. It's the, not so much the expected rain anymore, it's the unexpected, random, like the other day we had a blob of rain just sit over us for several hours.
Wednesday I got rained on three times, and it didn't even look like it was should be raining or anything.
Right.
There was multiple times this spring where I got rained on, and I would check the radar, and my little GPS point would be bigger than the radar, rain thing. So I was like,
where is this? I checked it the other day, and the blob, it wasn't even green. Everything was away from me. Like, why am I getting rained on that's not even green where my dot is, but yet it's pouring?
Yeah, it's been a struggle to find places where it's not raining. I mean, you drive away from the rain for a little bit, and it seems to just show up where you are. It's stalking us. And so, how's that been affecting your guys spraying? You guys seen any issues making timely applications? Whether it's herbicide, I know insecticide. There's been some cases of that needing to be sprayed.
Well, the joke has been for the sprayer people is like, if it's not raining, it's windy.
Right. It does seem
so. What can they do?
Yeah, I feel bad for the sprayer people this spring because it's been a very difficult spring to kind of manage. Honestly, I think they're doing a very good job around all the rain we've been getting. Obviously, there's some fields that need it and could use it, but man, if they really, in general, for all things considered, they're able to sneak in and get stuff sprayed fairly timely. So,
yeah, no, I mean, it has been kind of feast or famine that way. I mean, we had a hard enough time getting in the fields to get them planted, and then now it's the struggle of, yeah, it's too windy, it's too wet. There's things we need to spray for that we weren't planning to spray for. In some cases, you know, whether it's armyworm or hay fields. I know a few hay fields are getting sprayed this year, and it's been a while since we've had years like that where it's like, oh, yeah, we really have to be on top of spraying because our windows are short.
What's changed for me is Todd and I were talking beforehand. Any plan to pass just kind of got kicked out the window and went, well, I guess we're going to do a one-pass post and put everything in at once and hope we don't have to come back because the weeds are out of control, and, you know, it's 3 weeks after we wanted to do it.
Right. Yeah.
I feel like the rain this week, though, and we're talking kind of that middle of the late June right now, and the rain this week finally got everybody, like, I don't know if it's the gloomy weather along with, it's like all things combined. It was a frustrating spring, but this week it did seem like it hit a breaking point where everybody's just tired out and frustrated, and it was like enough guys to finished this week, you know, got all their corn in, got beans in, first crop was done, and it didn't even feel like you won the battle. That was what right. I thought is the weirdest feeling ever. Most of the time at the end of the spring, you feel like you accomplished something, and, you know, yep, we did it. And obviously the feeling of accomplishment in fall is way different because that's the true finish line. But, you know, we were comparing this to the Ironman, I think, at one point of you got the swim, then you ride the bike, and then you do the marathon. And
yep.
I feel like we at least finished the swimming part, maybe, and, you know, we're on to the next thing. But it didn't feel like a win, any of it. And I think that's hard. Is I even had one grower's, you know, I got it in the ground, nothing I'd be proud of, but it's planted. And I think that is part of it, too, is like the nothing we can be proud of is the truth. It's like the job we did wasn't perfect. It wasn't even adequate at times, but I still think we should maybe be proud of it because it's done. You did it. Now it keeps raining. It'll be okay, usually. Right. And so anyway, I guess that part of this is hopefully the farmers out there can take a sense of pride in what you did. And gloomy weather just makes you tired and crabby anyway.
Unlike last year where we were done early and then we just needed to wait almost this long to actually see all of our planted seeds out of the ground.
Right.
I mean, it's just been such a weird like mirror year here of like last year was so dry and there was nothing we could do. Like we had all the time in the world to do whatever we wanted to do, but it wasn't going to matter. To where now it's like we have to find these windows to do what we can, and then we have to do as much as we can as fast as we can because the window will close very quickly.
It seems like all the pre's have worked, though. If you were lucky to get your pre on at planting, it's working.
No, even pre's are working. Some of the planting jobs, like I said, that guys shouldn't be proud of, but you go look later, you know, 2 weeks later, and I was there when they were doing it, like, oof, this is going to be tough, but it's looking okay now, and things are coming. So that's good, too. And there's some rough-looking corn up there. I'm not saying that, but there's some pretty good-looking corn out there as well.
But to kind of jump off Matt's point, like last year, if you planted it bad, when it's dry like that, it just compounds how bad it really is, right? Well, now this year, if you plant it bad, well, all the moisture kind of covers up our sins a little bit.
Yep. Right. We didn't have the rain to fix our sins last year, and this year we've got nothing but.
I do think it's got to be something to do with the dichotomy of the years.
Yeah.
Like we're literally two sides of the coin. Like last year, so dry, could do whatever you wanted. And then to go back to a year where it was dry through March and April. And then as we got into May, right when we wanted to get going, and then just turned on the rain. And that part of this year is just odd that we've had wet years, but usually they come off of a wet fall or we have a precursor to it, not where it just totally turns on edge, where all the things we learned last year, too, of basically they don't matter at all this year. It's the complete different year. So yeah, just interesting and fun,
especially like with covers. Last year we couldn't kill them fast enough,
right? And this year, and I haven't, not that I've heard anyone say it, but I wonder if guys are thinking like, oh, maybe I shouldn't have killed that cover so quick because at least would have sucked some of this water out of the ground.
I had it both ways where guys that left them did somewhat regret not terminating, but at the same time kind of knew it was both that there was maybe no win that way, you know.
That's a good way to put it, Todd. No win this year, because you couldn't like, I'll let this just suck out some moisture for a week and then we can deal with it later. Well, but
you
never
couldn't get back in there.
You never
later,
got that week to get back in there. And the guys that did terminate early, you know, there wasn't much for cover there and you didn't have the biology growing, but when it was time to plant, you didn't have 6 foot tall rye either to deal with.
Right.
So that kind of helped.
All right. You guys ready to get into our topic for today?
Yeah.
So sandhill cranes.
What did you call them, Matt, before?
Ribeye in the sky.
Ribeye.
Never actually eaten one, but that's what I've heard, is that guys say they're good eating ribeye in the sky. Not that you can do that here in Wisconsin.
They're usually, they're corn fed, so. You'd think they'd,
that's why we're talking about them.
Yeah, right.
Do you have to, if you could harvest them, would you have to harvest them now then when they're still eating the corn? Because later I think they just eat bugs and other things. So
that's good protein too.
Yeah, so there's still protein there. So Bill, what do you got for us on sandhill cranes?
Yeah, again, some of these topics that we do during the summer kind of mirror what's happening in the field. And with this later planted season here, I was walking a field with a grower on Wednesday, and he called me last week and he's like, oh, did you see those cranes in the field? And I'm like, yeah, I saw a couple, you know. And he's like, oh, it's just terrible. I think I'm going to replant the whole field. And it's like a 100-acre field. And I'm like, I know they can be bad, right? Like, you guys have all been in fields, and the listeners probably too, like, been in fields, but like, bad enough that you have to replant 100 acres. So I got to thinking, like, what do we do here? So, and I'm just curious, thinking about this topic. What happens, you know, how big of a problem is this? Is it just the Midwest? Is it just us? I mean, we're in an area, and this field actually happened to be near Shiocton, which I know that within this company, we know that that's kind of like Sandhill Crane.
Anywhere you get near a water body, like you have the Wolf River running through Shiocton, it seems like heavy water, marshlands, they're everywhere.
Yep. So, and we started walking the field, and he had some sins there from planting it wet. So there was some corn that didn't emerge because of just chunky soil, and then it dried out a little bit. But there was some sandhill crane damage. And the interesting part is doing some research here. The Wildlife Service in Wisconsin receives about 160 complaints a year on sandhill crane damage to crops, which I thought was actually kind of low, but maybe people don't always, you know, report anything to, because it's so, you guys have seen it, right? It's patchy, or they'll just take out one row or a couple of spots.
They like to go right down the row, it seems, which is kind of annoying.
It's very hard to replant that, right? Versus, you know, maybe you got to plow it up and just flat start over, but those complaints, they're estimating at $1.2 million in crop damage. So that's not insignificant, I would think. So what do you do about them? I mean, I know years I worked at, I worked in the Horicon area, and you drive through the marsh and they got the guns.
Yeah, the cannons.
Blowing for the geese, and it seems like that'll work for a little while, and then it's like a scarecrow, right? After a while, that thing's not moving, so we're not going to worry about it.
It does seem the cranes scare less than geese or other birds like that. I had one grower do those, like I call them the seed sign scarecrows, or you put a seed sign out and then you put basically just a garbage bag over it.
Yep.
And
it just flaps in the wind.
Flaps, and it just something to...
Yeah, it seems like cranes are more apt to just like move 50 yards away.
Right.
Like, oh, that spooked us a little bit, but we're not actually going to leave. We're just going to go.
Especially if they have a nest, right, and an egg or a little one with them. They ain't moving much.
Right. Yeah, and you can't hunt them.
Can't hunt them.
That's not legally, anyway, in the state of Wisconsin.
So the other option is chemical treatment, not of the birds themselves, which...
Yes, we're not spraying birds, not spraying cranes.
But Evapel, which that's been around a while. Seed treatment that you put on the bird. No, you don't put it on the bird. You put it on the seed beforehand, and it's basically a deterrent. So I think, I don't know what you guys have seen, but I've had some growers use it, and I think it works pretty decent. It's never going to be 100% because they obviously still have to...
Right, they have to eat some of it.
Eat some of it, and, oh, this doesn't taste good, so we move on. Up to, in the past couple of years, you know, 200,000, 300,000 acres have been treated with it. So it's definitely... has its place, and the increase of acres of usage is going up. I think the biggest thing for me is I've seen that like certain fields get hit.
Mm-hmm.
And some of that too, Matt, you were talking about in marshy areas, but even I get to some areas of my trade territory and it's like, well, this field seems to always get nailed, and a field a mile down the road that's got the same conditions doesn't. So I think you got to kind of log your fields, if you will, ones that you feel like are more prone to those cranes, and keep that in mind when it goes to corn, that potentially you should be thinking about Evapel on that acre.
Have you ever tried to tie it back? Like, do they like Smart Stacks better than VT2 Pro or...
Not that good. No.
I don't know that I've ever seen it. It'd be interesting.
If there's like, a variety they would like more
that they
than
like
the
better, but never. No, nothing to that where you've seen them.
Maybe like a brand away. Better. Maybe yeah. They're.
Yeah, they're
really like a Chevy guy. Like I like Chevys, so I'm gonna eat Pioneer corn, or I'm gonna eat the kelp corn.
Yeah, you never know.
They just seem like pricks. They don't care. They just eat whatever.
Yeah.
Maybe they'll like the taste of some of these biologicals better.
Right. That would be
there. You go. Yeah, that we can.
It's like a probiotic. It's like a probiotic for their belly.
There you go.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just so difficult to predict, too, because it seems like some years you'll have a pair in a field and they'll just eat away, and then the next year you'll have 20 pairs in the field and they're just hanging out doing nothing.
They invited other friends.
Yeah,
it does seem progressive though that way. Is you usually don't get a flock just out of nowhere. Typically, you have a mating pair first, and then they kind of gain from there. So I would say like. We've had it where a little bit out of nowhere, but usually there's a little bit of warning to these kind of, but you're right, Bill, you don't want to treat all your acres is the cost, but so then it's prioritizing certain areas or certain fields, and then they might go to, they're obviously going to go to different fields because those are treated.
Right.
This chart you got here of avapel use by state, Wisconsin, Michigan, Minnesota. And it is wild how much Wisconsin's using it in Minnesota and Michigan.
It's pretty flat line under the 20,000 acres in the whole state. And like, we're at, you know, in this chart, actually, Todd only goes to 2019. So I would imagine that's 5 years already. So I would imagine the acreage has gone up. But Minnesota and Michigan, it's just. Flatlining.
You think like Minnesota with how many lakes they have,
right?
Obviously, they have a lot of marshy areas too, and that this would be a big problem for them, just odd that certain states and that how much it's used in Wisconsin. I've actually seen a billboard for it.
Yeah,
avapel in Wisconsin. Yep.
There's one on the way to Madison, maybe.
The one I saw was like by the Dell, like on 39, right? Is the one that goes from like.
Yeah,
point to the, yeah. There's yep. yeah there's
3951.
There's one on 3951. So,
just a quick Google search here, and I suspected this, but while they are still protected, it's legal to hunt them in Michigan and Minnesota.
That's what I was guessing too. Yeah, okay,
hunting's legal.
So there's a season, apparently. It looks like they started back in like 2012 ish. So, yeah, I think that might be part of the equation there, too, is, yeah, we do not, and I believe, or at least what I've heard, is it's to protect whooping cranes is because people don't.
Oh, sure.
Apparently, even though they don't look all that alike, there's concern that whooping cranes, which are endangered and less populated, that someone would shoot one of those as opposed to the sandhill crane, so.
There in Wisconsin, you do have to purchase some there's ways to get a permit to shoot some cranes, but there's steps you got to take. I know one of them's, you know, having pictures of damage and showing damage, obviously.
Yep.
And then purchasing, there's an amount of avapel you got to purchase. So that could be driving some of this purchase too.
Sure. So they're trying to at least get them, do something to get them out of here,
right?
And have them go somewhere else, versus just. Lead poisoning right away.
Yep.
But you're right, Matt. That is, I was wondering that, like if there was a season, that's interesting. And it's also interesting, the whooping crane versus sandhill, because I feel like they're quite different. Like whooping crane's more white, just that, I don't know. I'm not saying you can tell sandhill cranes when you can, but it's rare to see also a whooping crane out in the field. Have I seen him? You know, yeah, but it's more often you see the sandhill. So,
and I think the other thing to think about too is if you have applied a field to with avapel, doesn't mean the cranes aren't going to be there, right? Because obviously they still have to eat a few and to taste. You know, you don't know it tastes bad unless you try it.
Yep.
But also, they're still going to look for other things in the field to eat. So whether there's flies or bugs or maybe you got white grubs or something that they're looking for, so they're going to find something else. So even if they're there, you know, just kind of cautioning growers that just make sure they're feeding. And that, you again, I think what kind of spurred my idea on this was it just feels like sometimes when we see cranes in the fields, we jump to the like, oh, the whole field is just going to be destroyed, which can happen and does happen. But I think in general, it's pretty minimal. And how do you fix it? That's the hard part about this discussion is I don't even know a good way to fix it besides trying the Avapel next time if you don't have it treated now. And replanting, right? And this year it seems like, I mean, we're already to June 21st, so it's hard to want to go back out and replant when we're this late already.
And you guys had alluded to this earlier. It is hard to replant the way they do damage because it'll just be one or two rows here and there at times. Sometimes it's significant, but
they don't do the headlands. It's always in the middle.
It just does seem like it's right. It's enough where it's hard to replant it. So
and sometimes it's just random plants too. So you got, you know,
that'd be better almost.
It would be.
If we could teach the cranes just to like eat one plant, skip like 20, eat a plant, I think we'd be okay with that. But the way they go down the row and just kind of, yeah, take it out that way.
100 feet gone of one row. Just teach them to do like one plant, 16 rows long. Like
they're wide, right. Wide. Go the width way. Right. Now we're on to something, Bill. We just got to teach the crane somehow.
I'm guessing they're not smart enough.
Yes, if you could only, just like a shock collar, like, nope, don't eat there, don't eat there.
It's amazing they can figure out the roll part in a way. I mean, that's got, to them, I think it's like a buffet. They just go right down the line.
Right, like somebody put all this food right in the row.
Yeah. God, you guys are so nice. This is great.
And they figured out singulation.
Right.
You know, to know like.
No, good point.
Every four to six inches, boom, I got to.
Yeah, that'd be a good question. Was this a problem when we had cycloplanners and our singulation was more poor? Did they are they recognizing patterns or is it some smell thing? But you're right. I think now when you put a picket fence for them, it's pretty easy to just walk right along.
So upon further inspection of Michigan may not have a season. It looked like they were proposing one, but I don't know if that actually went into effect. But either way, the sandhill cranes in some states you can hunt them. It's just in our area you can't. So that is not a viable solution unless you have, like Todd said, appropriate crop damage that you can report and get a tag. So yeah, there you go, sandhill cranes. We all know what they look like now. They may have been endangered at one time, but there's plenty of them out there, it seems, whenever we visit fields.
Even the cackle they make, I don't know what you'd call their call. Yeah, but it's very unique.
I can't even
do it. No, that really sounded like, it. Yeah.
That was like brutal.
Dying cat.
Yeah. It sounded like the Limu Emu thing or whatever.
Limu Emu. Doug. All right, now we'll move into our Ag History Minute. So we're going to talk the history of the mozzarella stick, mozzarella log, fried mozzarella, lots of different names depending on where you go for this particular treat. So gooey cheese within a fried golden breading. Who could have dreamed up such a thing of beauty? Well, many people know that it is not in a traditional Italian dish, despite the marinara sauce that is often served with it, though I prefer ranch. 1393 is the first documented practice of breading thin slices of cheese and frying it, which was found in a medieval French cookbook, Le Ménagerie de Paris. In 1976... The concept of string cheese came to life in the mid-70s when Frank Baker, a Wisconsin cheesemaker, dreamed up the idea of snack-sized pieces of mozzarella. In the 1980s, casual restaurant chains like TGI Fridays, Bennigan's, and Applebee's exploded in popularity with their large selection of appetizers. In 2012, there was an evaluation done by Huffington Post the best and worst mozzarella sticks at America's restaurants. 2015, McDonald's announced mozzarella sticks will pop onto menus across the country, which that didn't last long there. But I think, is it Arby's has mozzarella sticks on there? There's some fast food chains that still do. But yeah, if you enjoy mozzarella sticks, whether it's with marinara, ranch, honey mustard, you could put on, I suppose, barbecue. It's a delicious treat if you like cheese. And who doesn't like fried cheese? Whether it's cheese curds or, in this case, mozzarella sticks. So
if you're getting mozzarella sticks at the fair next week, are you going with ranch or marinara? Which are you?
Ranch. I'm ranch. Team ranch.
Team ranch.
They're about as equal of competitors as you'll get.
Yeah.
Like the marinara, you know, I'm not going like, oh, gross, marinara. It's good. No, but I agree with you. Ranch is, it's.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with marinara. I don't hate the marinara.
I wish you didn't have to. I wish they just put more sauce cups.
I think you can
just have both.
You can ask for both.
You can.
I think so. I think you can get like a cup of one and
there's got to be an upcharge.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're going to pay for it.
Yeah, well,
like $5.
Yeah.
They're
already expensive.
They're pretty expensive as it is.
What do you think? They were last year $9, right? For
no, I think it was 11? Like 10 or 11.
Was it 10 or 11? Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's been in the double digits for a couple of years now.
Yeah, that's true. You're right. You're whipping out. Yeah, it's double digit. So, all right. So, extra cup is probably like $5 or $6 then for
hopefully for not that
the ranch.
Well, fair is next week, Todd. So, you can.
It's fair time.
Yeah. It's a month earlier. So, it'll be interesting to see how she goes this year.
The kids got their projects done?
Actually, yeah. I mean, yes. Not complete, but as good as
I heard the cake was being worked on last week.
Yep. Made some angel food and got their photographs. Just got to be printed, so that's ready for a Walmart pickup sometime or something like that.
That was
so,
the nice part, probably for the fair being end of July or mid July. Like you got a whole month to.
But you didn't do anything.
That's
in that.
True.
Come on, fair. Remember, like actually, what worked out great this year was right after school. You could be like, so when school's done, you'd be like, work on your fair stuff. Whereas before, you didn't say that. Like, you'd just be like, well, I got 2 months here before I got to worry about that. Yeah. So, no, this is quite.
Todd always got his steer out about a week before the fair.
Oh, right.
Hooked her up to the tractor and
got her. Yeah, showing cattle, I think, go to. But there too, you get home after school maybe and you'd work on it more. Where this, like, I remember with that, you didn't worry about it till school was out.
Yeah.
Like, that was, the first time hooking up fair animals, Matt, that was always a treat. And then you realize what you got, and it wasn't always great.
Nope. Yeah, there may be some regrets there. But
all right, thank you, Matt, for telling us the history of the mozzarella stick. Please subscribe to the podcast and tell a farmer friend. It's real easy. All you need to do is search Tilth Talk Radio on Apple Podcasts or on an Android phone. Download an app like Podcast Addict. You can also listen on your computer or smartphone browser. Go to tilthegg.com/podcasts, and you can follow us on Facebook and X at Tilth Talk Radio. If you do have any fellow farmer friends out there that you know have listened to but haven't talked to them lately, tell them to resubscribe, because we've heard that some of our subscribers out there, like, the podcast stopped streaming in, so they stopped getting it in their feed, and basically thought we were done doing the podcast. So please tell them that, and then we want to apologize for last week's audio out there. That was my fault on the board. We sounded like we were in a harvester silo, Matt.
Maybe
we should have been.
Yeah, that might have been better.
I think it would have been better, actually. We had better acoustics than...
The kids do call the slurry store the echo chamber.
We could do the slurry store, yes. Yes, you're right. So, no, we hopefully got it fixed for this week, and Matt did his best to...
Yeah.
I appreciate Matt's work on post editing as good as you can, because if
you thought it sounded bad, you should have heard it the original.
The original was like, oh no, oh no. So
we are robots.
No, robots would have been better.
ChatGPT could have done a better job. And we could. All right. Thanks, Todd. Now it's time for our Cool Beans That's Corny and some current events. So Cool Beans.
Cool Beans.
Cool Beans.
Cool Beans. Our cool beans this week: Wisconsin students can now enroll in a virtual FFA chapter. So Sometimes it's hard to find.
Wait, what?
A local chapter.
You can enroll it virtually now?
And now you can enroll virtually. So, or maybe the chapter where you're at is just not as active as you'd like. So, Jesky Thompson, not sure if I said that right, is the new Wisconsin FFA state president. He tells Brownfield that some students have already benefited from the state's open enrollment opportunities where students can transfer to other districts without tuition costs. But he says he knows of one student in eastern Wisconsin that made the most of open enrollment with FFA. She grew up on a farm, but there was not an opportunity for her to join FFA in her original school, so she was able to move to a different school and take advantage of the opportunities. Well, now Wisconsin has a new way for students like that to get involved in FFA. As the state's first virtual charter was awarded last week to Destinations Career Academy. It's an exciting thing to award. There was opportunities there for students, and that is becoming a more of a thing. I know I have a college friend who works at a rural virtual academy where you go to school online, so it's good to have.
What's the rural part mean?
Rural?
Yeah. What
do you know? Do you,
we, you didn't
we
go
live
anywhere,
in a rural
right.
area.
You didn't go on. So you're just saying you have to live in a rural area and then you.
No, that's just the name of the school.
Got it.
I guess. Yeah. It's kind of like Rockledge Elementary.
No, that's fine. I just, the rural part. Like when you're not going anywhere.
Yeah.
It's just interesting. Yeah.
Well, and he's from a part of the state where usually a lot of school districts are combined. Like,
sure.
You know, we grew up, when we went to high school, we combined with Black Creek. But up there, it's like, you know, you have a lot of little districts. And so for sports especially, there's at least one or if not two different schools kind of joined together. So I think that might be part of that. But yeah. So new charters were also awarded to lacrosse and Milwaukee schools at FFA State Convention. So very cool that more opportunities to get involved with FFA. That's corny this week. The Corn Belt is expecting a very warm July and August. So we started out fairly cool season. Unlike last year, didn't have those 90-degree days in May, but this last week we really turned up the notch on the temperature button, and now intense heat wave is potentially descending on a large portion of the Corn Belt as corn planting comes to a close. Temperatures racing past 90 degrees and sporadic rain over the past week. Corn conditions were again on the decline, unfortunately, for the USDA crop report. In Iowa, reports from Iowa State University Extension agronomists show that there are varying conditions and levels of dryness in the state. Central Iowa agronomist Megan Anderson says there are various stages for corn in the area, but one thing was consistent: dry conditions, which is kind of ironic that they were in such a drought and now we've kind of come out of a drought, but there's still some dry conditions in certain areas. So there seems to be lessening the amount of rain that they get. They just had about a half inch of rain in the last week. They could use a little bit more to keep things going. Corn conditions dropped to 72% good to excellent, down from 70% the prior week. Slight drops are expected to continue with the heat. So hopefully we'll see things. I mean, with the heat, I've noticed one thing that really kind of got things going with some of the early planted corn. It really jumped up and even got a lot better color this week.
Yeah, I was in a field, so like kind of right around mid-June, taking a PSNT, and it was probably like the 12th of June, and the bottom of the probe at 12 inches was ice cold to the touch. It was unbelievable. Like, it was like, holy man, how, and obviously through the whole soil profile, it was cold at about, say, 6 inches down. So that soil was cold that I think part of our problems weren't just saturated soils. That was part of it. But it was cold soil and saturated both. And now this week, grabbing PSNTs, yeah, it's warm through the profile now with the heat we've gotten and
sure.
The warm rains
yep.
really going, pushing down that, yeah, I think it's sort of, I mean, we do need some heat to get warm now. It also gets really, really hot in a long time. And it is sticky. It's very sticky these weeks, where even days where I'm like, man, it's like we're running the AC just to keep the humidity
right,
out.
Right, the humidity has been
not
high,
always the yeah. heat.
It's not the heat. It's the gosh darn humidity. All right. Now we'll wrap things up with a Field Good Friday. So this week we're talking dairy means good health. So dairy foods are beneficial. Research indicates that dairy products contribute essential nutrients to a person's diet and may even reduce the risk of obesity, total mortality, and stroke. According to Moses Torres Gonzalez, Vice President of Nutrition Research at the National Dairy Council, removing whole milk products from a diet results in deficiencies of calcium, vitamin D, vitamin A, riboflavin, and niacin. There's also a preponderance of evidence showing dairy foods have a neutral or beneficial association with cardiovascular disease, type 2 diabetes, metabolic syndrome, or increased blood pressure. So oversimplification of saturated fat substitution without considering the source can have serious health effects. Higher consumption of total dairy foods, regardless of fat, is associated with a reduced risk of total mortality and stroke. So I think that's an assumption. The whole dairy foods leads to increased rates of obesity because they have fat and calories, but observational evidence suggests consuming dairy products with increased fat content within a typical diet is inversely proportional to obesity. So there you go. Eat more dairy.
Yay.
Preaching the choir here.
Whether it's cheese, milk, yogurt, all good. All right, that'll do it for this week. Thanks for being here, guys.
Thanks for having us, Matt.
So this week we talked sandhill cranes. We also, in our Ag History Minute, took a look at the history of the mozzarella stick. Cool beans this week was students can now enroll in a virtual FFA chapter. That's corny. The Corn Belt expects a very warm July and August, so the summer may be just heating up. And our Field Good Friday, dairy is good for you and can help you achieve better health. So thanks for listening, and as always, happy farming.